there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas.
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katsalamidis. I write the Cats Report for the Las Vegas Sun. You better believe it, the Las Vegas Sun, alive and well. Joining me now is Nina DiGregorio. She's the founder of Bella Electric Strings, which plays gigs all over the world, including Las Vegas, where she is based. She's played with David Foster on his PBS specials and is a mainstay in Lon Bronson's All-Star Band, one of our favorite bands in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Nina D. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So far, so good. So tell me about, there's so much to talk to you about. Tell me about how Bella Electric Strings started.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. When I was in high school, I had an all-girl string quartet called the Sweet Expressions String Quartet, and we were just little kids, and I had, like, my mom's little Cadillac, and we were all mafia listening to Frank Sinatra, and we'd drive to our little wedding gigs back in Buffalo, you know.
Where you're from.
Yep.
Buffalo, New York.
And we had a steady gig at a restaurant, an Italian place in Little Italy in Buffalo, and they'd pay us $50 each, plus a meal every night, and we started to get a little following. And I was always into rock music and pop music. I listened to guitar players growing up, Hendrix, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, Terry Kath from Chicago. So wow. I would start to write on paper because I couldn't afford software yet, you know, transcriptions for the quartet to play. So when we were at this restaurant, we would start doing all these tunes, and now everyone in Vegas is doing them. So
it was you were ahead of the curve when it came to playing rock on violin.
Yeah, right? We were
amplified
still,
violin.
We were acoustic back then because, like I said, we were all just 15, 16-year-old kids. We couldn't afford electric gear at that time. But that's how the whole thing kind of started, and moved to Vegas and met a bunch of people that, you know, helped along the way and became what it did.
When did you pick up the violin? When did you decide to start, or when did you start taking lessons?
It's kind of a funny story. In fourth grade, well, I started piano at 6, and then in fourth grade, you're forced to take an instrument in school where I'm from, and I picked first choice tenor sax, second choice alto sax, third choice barry sax. I want to play saxophone. So I bring
not
my
a violin
little,
to be found.
No, I bring my little sheet into the band director, and he sees the choices I made, and he looks at me, and he goes, okay, you're way too small. You're never going to be able to carry any of
you're
these instruments.
You're about the size of a baritone yourself.
Yeah, he's like, you can not carry any of these instruments to the bus. Why don't you play the violin? It's way lighter. And I was like, all right, cool. Like Sunday morning.
Did you enjoy it at first?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. I liked playing it, but I always treated it more like a guitar than a violin, much to the chagrin of my teachers. You know, I was always improvising solos and picking out Beatles songs and things like that, and not always so interested in what they wanted me to be studying. But now that I'm older, I've grown to appreciate all kinds of music. But back then, I was mostly focused on guitar players.
You know, I've always felt like with the violin, especially, this is true of all instruments, but a violin is the most beautiful instrument when played well. But it's a very tough instrument to listen to when it's played improperly. And you have to get through that period when you're learning it, right? I mean, the squeaky, the shrilly, you know, moments.
I mean, my mom is always a funny one to ask about that because I don't remember back then. I mean, that was a long time ago for me, like, you know, 45 years ago. So, but she claims that I never squeaked. She said that I never squeaked, but, you know, she is my mom, so she's probably biased about all of that. But the violin is definitely the most difficult instrument to perform well, and especially if you play Bach on violin, it can tend to make great players sound mediocre and mediocre players sound just god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how is it a lot easier to play rock than it is classical music? I would expect that it's easier to pick that up than...
Technically, and for what's expected, it's just different. It's apples and oranges, because when I first moved to Las Vegas, I couldn't take a solo to save my life. I had never seen music without the notes written on paper that I could learn. I had no idea what to do, so I had to teach myself. And from transcribing a lot of solos when I was younger, I could understand some of the theory, but it's a completely different thing. You don't study modes at all when you study classical music, so... It's different. I wouldn't say it's technically easier, yes, probably, but, you know, just different.
What does studying modes mean? What is modes?
Well, it's like a different...
I don't know what modes is.
Modes are, you know, different ways that you can solo, depending on which
methods.
Notes you leave out of the scale steps and things like that, so...
I got it.
Yeah.
You play, what do you play in Bronson's band? You play Kashmir, right?
We do Kashmir, yeah.
You play a lot of rock in that.
Mostly rock songs.
Yeah. And when I first met you, you were in acoustic soul.
That's right.
Over, and you were playing a gig at the Roadrunner, and I didn't know what I was walking into at that point, but there you guys were, and it was an interesting format. I was startled to see a violinist in that bar, for starters, playing live. I didn't know that that was part of the act. But that was an interesting format in that you had people kind of request, you had a menu of songs and make requests that way. It speaks to the versatility of your playing when you're in a band like that.
That was one of the best times that I had playing music in Las Vegas was when I was in that band, because whenever you're in someone else's project, it kind of takes that stress away from having it be your own all the time, and so you could just go let loose, have fun. And we used to play O'Shea's all the time, and that was like, that place was nuts. It was one of my favorite places to play. Plus, I could say anything over the microphone and not have to worry about cussing ever. It was great.
And you're just a few feet from like a dollar beer and shot night and over.
Talk about shot night. Yeah. I think someone did get shot like one night that we played there. Definitely.
There, I know that it was that little stage right next to the bar, right?
Yeah.
Downstairs.
Yeah, that little place right between the cigar bar and the actual bar, and it stunk like hell. They were good times.
We were saying when they decided to tear down O'Shea's that it was actually the teardown of it was an improvement on what they had going on. Where's the weirdest place you played?
I would have to say that one of the nights playing in O'Shea's and finding a body in the parking lot was one of the most bizarre instances in my musical career.
That did happen?
I thought that he was dead, and I went and got security. It was right before one of our shows, but it turned out he was just so drunk that he was not barely conscious. And I was glad that the dude was alive, but it was still like just a very, I'm like, only at O'Shea's, you know?
Yeah, and now that guy's in Lon's band.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
kid, of course.
He's actually our our trumpet player.
Sorry about that, Tom DeLibro. No, how did you get hooked up with Lon's band?
Lon has always been like the coolest person to me since I moved to town. When I first met him, he's just always had my back for everything. Like, you go through different periods in your musical career, and you know how it is. People like you, people hate you, this and that. Mm-hmm. Well, he always...
Mostly the latter.
Mostly, yeah, especially if you're from New York. People tend to not like that in the Southwest very much. But anyway, they think that we think we're better than everyone else. I mean, I don't know what...
Because
we are.
Maybe because you go around telling everybody that. I do have a question about Buffalo, but continue about Lon.
Anyways, Lon would have me guest artist in the band. Back then they were playing Ovation Lounge at GVR a couple times a month, and I would like kind of guest sit in. And when the first time the guys heard me do 25 or 6 to 4, I transcribed the solo like note for note, and I was a huge Terry Kath fan. They were, you know, we just geeked out. We like guitar geeked out on the whole thing the first time I met all those guys. And it was just a lasting friendship and musical partnership, and we still do stuff together, like the Symphonic Rock Show.
Yes, which is coming up. That's September 6th with Brody.
That's right. Brody, the genius behind the rock show.
The mad genius.
He's a genius.
He's a freak, isn't he? He's a good buddy.
In a good way.
Yeah, he's freakishly talented.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've always thought that about him. And that's another one. Tell me about that. That hookup was made through Brody and Lon. Is that how you got involved with Brody's project? Well, you played the first one of these, right?
Yeah, we did the first show. We did the first show. So, you know, Brody, he's super, super talented at everything he does. He has an amazing ear, amazing chops on everything, vocals, piano, guitar, whatever. And the orchestral show, he needed orchestral people to help get the scores, you know, prepared for musicians to sit down and play them. And so he went to me and Lon, and then Lon and I have this kind of whole assembly line thing going where the horns, he does the horns and I do the strings, and then we kind of put them together, and there you go.
I talked to Brody, I did an interview with him last week for a column that's going to come up in it before the show, and I was trying to get him to explain how he can make a chart in his head but not know how to write music. That seemed like a very complicated thing, you know, to be able to hear something like you want it to sound and then go to you and go to Lon and make it sheet music, make it a chart. What's that like on your end? That's got to be a lot of work.
That's actually my boyfriend and I just had this conversation the other day about how it is possible to have that kind of talent where you hear the whole orchestration in your head, but if you haven't studied exactly how to put it down on paper, you know, you kind of need help to get it out a little bit. And so it's things like bowings, rhythms, articulations, voicings, notes, knowing the rules of theory and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me back to those dark, dark days of college that I'd kind of like to forget.
We got to take a break real quick here, Nina D. We have coming up Josh Bell, our regular movie contributor of Josh Bell Hates Everything, is going to give us this week's review. Stick around. I know we will.
Hi, this is Billy Johnson, author of If I Die, Tell Steve Martin I Found His Journal, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish.
I really, really hate you.
I can understand that.
That's Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez delivering some of the minimal dialogue in the car chase thriller Getaway. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Getaway's moronic, nonsensical plot involves a former race car driver, played by Ethan Hawke, forced by a mysterious mastermind, played by John Voight, to steal a souped-up car and wreak havoc on the streets of Sofia, Bulgaria. Selena Gomez is hilariously miscast as a street-smart, tough girl who gets caught up in the mayhem, and the dialogue is consistently terrible. Even the car chases, impressive at first, quickly become repetitive. I give Getaway 1.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is the polished legal thriller Closed Circuit, starring Eric Bana and Rebecca Hall as a pair of London lawyers assigned to defend a suspected terrorist.
What is she doing here?
Ask her yourself.
She and I are not allowed to communicate.
An exception can be made for the common courtesies. Though evidently not in this case.
Until the actual delivery of the closed material, I am permitted to communicate with Mr. Rose. Whether or not I choose to do so is another matter.
Now, as I'm beginning to understand.
So would you please inform this gentleman that I am here to see Mr. Devlin?
Closed Circuit's filmmakers keep the suspense going without resorting to cheap fake-outs or absurd twists, and the script features a careful balance of character and plot development. The eventual plot resolution is satisfying, if a little too neat, and even if the movie doesn't make any big political statements, it tells a story well enough that it doesn't need to. I give Closed Circuit 3.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. This is John Katzlamitas, Cats with the Dish, sitting in for Tricia McCrone, who's at our Flathead Lake Bureau in Kalispell, Montana. She's back next week, I think, but maybe not. We'll see. Sitting with me now is Nina DiGregorio, who's the founder of Bella Electric Strings of Las Vegas and elsewhere. Where are you? Let's see. One thing I want to ask you about is performing with David Foster. I've seen you do a couple of these shows. These what seem to be marathon shows at the MGM Grand, where he does 4 hours of material to get a TV special. How did that relationship begin, and what's it like playing with him?
Well, it's kind of a funny story how that whole thing started. Another violinist in town, Lisa Visculia, and I, we used to hang out all the time, and we had a Niagara Falls connection. Her dad, who was a really great musician, had this Niagara Falls connection, and so when I moved here, everyone said I had to meet her. And so she invited me to come one time and hang out in the copyist room when they were doing a David Foster thing for the Agassiz benefit. And
right.
I remember, I think Glenn Frey was playing, and someone came into one of the rooms and said, "Does anyone in this room play fiddle? Does anyone play fiddle? Because Glenn Frey needs a fiddle player last minute." And I just remember keeping my mouth shut and not saying anything, because I didn't feel like I was ready to step up at that point. I wanted to make sure that, like, the first time Foster ever heard me play, I was ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember the first time I met those guys, they didn't even know I played violin. I just was there in the copyist room and just kept my mouth shut the whole time. But as I got more comfortable and studied more and practiced more and, you know, just did more things, and then I started to perform, and then obviously I was comfortable doing solos and things like that. But that was how it initially started, was scared little kid in the copyist room.
You brought out in the last show, I saw you brought out pretty prominently in the show. I think it was a year before last.
Yeah, I think it was with Charisse. We did a Celine Dion tune.
Yes, that was the one. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That was really cool. That was really fun. It's interesting to know somebody personally, and then you're sitting there in the audience at a David Foster show, and they've got the spotlight on them, and they're all made up, and they're playing the violin. then afterwards you meet up and you're
it really does a job on your nervous system. That's like the one gig you don't want to mess up.
I bet it. Well, yeah, I'll bet. I was like feeling nervous just watching it.
Yeah, you know how you go to Mexico and they call it Montezuma's Revenge? I always like to call it David Foster's Revenge, like before a show. Like,
you have to be medicated for it. Is he? I've heard he's a very intense person to work with.
Yes,
the Foster is
definitely. And I remember the first few times that we did the gigs, he knows what he wants. He knows how to get it, and he is gonna tolerate no less than excellence, on his stage. And so it's a lot of pressure. But like the second or third time I worked with him, he knew me as the little blonde violinist, and I was like, okay, I think I'm in now. I'm the little blonde violinist. So
then you went and changed your hair color.
That's right.
Got to get a new identity. How many members of Bella are there now? I mean, it's expanded, this little violin empire you've got going here in town.
That's right.
There's a bunch of them, right?
Yeah, and I hear it's the cool thing to do to date a Bella girl now, too.
From what I understand, yeah, that's what my people tell me. Yeah, but only one at a time because they're crazy.
They are pretty nutty to deal with. so we started out just as a regular band, kind of. And as the demand grew, we decided we had to expand from a band to a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we branched out. I can't do it alone anymore, so we assembled a good team of people to help build the infrastructure and help create some new ideas for the group, which, of course, that's something that mm-hmm. we can talk about later, maybe.
Whenever you like, honey.
It got to the point where we had to have 3, 4, 5 groups going out in the same night, and mm-hmm. we didn't want the quality to suffer at all. So we decided to do auditions, and now we've got about 30 girls and techs over 2 cities, Los Angeles and Las Vegas, that are able to do shows at any time. And we train them the same way, and we do like little beauty school tips and things, because mm-hmm. it's like a Big Mac. You go to one in Japan, a McDonald's there, you go to McDonald's here, it's got to taste the same. So we have to make sure that all of our girls are the same quality.
Yeah.
And, we're lucky. We got a team of rock stars right now.
Yeah, I forget who it was said this to me the other night, that Las Vegas has cornered the market on great, beautiful violinists.
That's right.
There's a higher concentration in Las Vegas than anywhere else.
That's right.
That's true. I mean, and fortunately, there's enough work.
That's right? The main thing. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people move here because of the work.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here for a job myself nine years ago.
There's a lot of Buffalo, by the way. There's a connection to Buffalo and Vegas. We have the Shintas here. Clint Holmes originally is from Buffalo. You're from Buffalo. Is there any connection?
The drummer from Acoustic Soul. He was Rick James' drummer, Lannis Hughes, and
who
he's
is
from
incredible,
Buffalo.
By the way. Yeah, I remember him that night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, what a player!
A lot of Buffalo musicians in town.
Yeah. Is there any sensible connection, or is it just coincidental that has happened?
Well, I mean,
because none of
I guess it's 2013, so you're allowed to talk about it now. But I mm-hmm. think it goes back to the mob days, probably. There was a big Italian population in Western New York area, and then they all moved out here and ran casinos and stuff like that, and then families have gone back and forth for years.
That's a documented connection.
Yeah.
So that there's a natural, although we can't say anybody from Buffalo now in Las Vegas is connected in any way to
organized
crime.
Not at all.
Crime.
Nobody is connected anymore. I mean, I think that pretty much doesn't exist.
You just have that attitude, the mob type attitude, without being actually in organized crime.
That's right. I have never officially been in organized crime.
Have you ever whacked anybody?
I'm going to plead the Fifth Amendment on that.
Plead the Fifth.
Whacked what part of body specifically?
The whacked. The editorial version of whacked. You're going to be playing with Lon Bronson, speaking of whacked, on the 25th at the Smith Center, we just found out today.
That's right. Lon Bronson, it's, I believe, one of the first shows that's going to happen there.
At Cabaret Jazz.
At Cabaret Jazz. Yeah. As a recreational type event, right?
I just heard about this today. But there's been a big backstory about getting a big band or a show band in there, whatever you want to call it, in Cabaret Jazz. You've played in there? Have you played the small room in there?
I've played there before. I think it was with Spectrum. We played, the Bella Strings played with Spectrum there mm-hmm. before.
What do you think of it?
I think it's a great little room. I think it's more of a boutique setting. Getting out of the casinos and getting into the Smith Center, it's going to bring a whole new element to live music, I think. You know, you're playing for a different boss and a different kind of crowd.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that Boulder Station crowd is the same crowd as they get into the Cabaret Jazz at the Smith Center. I'm wondering if there are going to be anybody.
Now, don't get me wrong. The Boulder Station crowd is fun. They're fun.
They're colorful.
They're colorful, and they always buy me shots.
Which makes you colorful.
We had
some interpretive dance going on there last time I was in the room at the Boulder.
Definitely some avant-garde contemporary moves.
Yes. Yeah. Some of the greatest moves are recited through flashbacks, I think. So you've got something else coming up that I don't know how much detail you can get into. You sort of alluded to it earlier. That is going to be violin-centric, violin-based, violin-inspired in town. What can you tell us about this new project you've been cooking up?
Well, it's always important to stay on the cutting edge of putting out a new product.
Cutting edge.
Yes, I think it's an innate part of my personality that no matter what gets accomplished, the next morning when I wake up, I feel like nothing has been accomplished. So I'm always looking for ways to improve and to create something new. And
that's a lot of pressure on a person, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but you know.
I wonder you're so excitable
all the
time. I've
got big shoulders, strong.
Go ahead.
So my boyfriend, who also happens to be...
Ron.
Yes, his name's Ron, and he also happens to be...
Garonini.
Kind of a jack of all trades.
Garoni.
He does
a lot
of...
His name is Ron.
Yeah, Ronaldinho. That's his soccer name. Anyways, we were talking about possible ways to, all right, a lot of groups doing the same thing that we are now. There's groups popping up everywhere, some of them good, some of them not so good, some of them attractive, some of them not so attractive. And, he had this awesome idea for how to expand on our brand.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is you better get ready to bust that zebra shirt out once more.
Ooh, to the dry cleaner with the zebra shirt. Am I going to be dancing? Is this one of those dancing
yes,
deals?
Yes, you will have to show up to our premiere with goldfish heeled shoes.
Oh my God, got to go back to the county fair. This is going to be a production show, right?
A big production show. When we launched Bella Strings, I was a poor college kid. I couldn't afford to do anything, so I funded it with no investor myself. Like every time I would wait a table or something, you'd throw mm-hmm. the money in towards your project. But this time, we're going to do it the right way from the beginning. We're having it be a showroom. We're going to do the launch with videos and screens behind us, a full band. Lon Bronson's going to be a part of it. He's going to be a co-music director.
Terrific.
And it's going to be great. And we've got Ashley, Adriana, Lydia, Christina. Awesome Bella girls. You can all check out their bios on our website if you want to see pictures for personal use.
So it's one thing, as you know, to have a great idea for a show and another to get that thing funded on stage. I mean, how's the money going to work here? You have a producer, investor? You save
well,
up
I am
nickels?
The richest violinist in Las Vegas. I mean,
well,
I'm
I hope
kidding.
You're the richest after the show starts.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a little inside Lon Bronson joke. It's usually Mark Barrett, the richest drummer
the
in
drummer.
Las Vegas.
I love that, yeah. Doesn't he have a list of the rich drummers?
Yes,
it's like Ringo Starr.
Yeah, there's like, Steve Gadd, Ringo Starr, Mark Barrett. Yeah. He's like number three on the list.
For a while, I take people to the show to see Lon, and they always ask, is that true? And I just get carried on. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, so anyways... The good thing is it takes such a long time to put together a production show that I have time to pay for it a little bit at a time. I don't have to like write one giant check for like a brand new Lamborghini all at once. Mm-hmm. It can kind of break it up little by little. And Andy Walmsley, who
yes,
you know, he's
friend
a friend
Andy.
Of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be involved in the production, so you know it's going to be good because he won't allow anything less on his stages.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy. Andy.
He's very talented.
He is a very talented man.
Great ideas, mm-hmm. super ideas, and just an all-around nice guy, easy guy to work with. And Yamaha, of course, helps us out as well with the instruments and with mm-hmm. a lot of the gear that we use.
And with the motorcycles, of course.
And, of course, that we're going to be riding in on motorcycles.
Is Andy helping to design the show, or is he actually part of it? Because he wants to be a producer now, Andy does.
Yes.
Is he going to be?
He's going to be producing. And okay. I'm sure that some of his set design expertise will be put to use as well, because can you imagine me sitting there painting a piece of wood for a show or something? I mean, really? Wait, that did not.
Euphemistically? I can't imagine you doing that. No. No, I can't imagine you wielding anything like a paintbrush. A shiv, maybe.
Anything other than a machete, right?
A machete, shiv,
yes.
Any sharp weaponry.
Tommy gun I could wield.
Implement, yeah, to do harm, I can imagine you wielding. Now, tell me about your gig at the Black and White that I've been reading so much about.
By everyone but you, apparently.
You've been complaining about me again. The Black and White Ball, Black and White Party was last weekend.
That's right. Very good cause.
Joint. It was a great cause.
Raised a lot of money.
Raised $130,000 in one night. And you helped make it happen. Isn't that gratifying?
It is very
gratifying. Isn't that override any kind of publicity you might get out
of it? It does. We don't do things specifically for publicity.
I find that astonishing.
But, I mean, we feel like the Bella girls have been awfully generous with you lately. So just a little mention could go a long
way.
They're
easy on the eyes. But, you know, Lisa Visculia once said to me, she said, we were talking about an act that was not Bella. That
yes.
was not Bella. I have to. And there were a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a while ago. And I asked her if they were any good. I said, are those guys any good? Because I don't really know. I'm not I only know when something's really bad, but I don't know when something's between good and great when it comes to the violin. I can pick out a terrible violin, but I don't know who's better than whom. I know Lisa's damn good because she went to Harvard.
She did.
Yeah.
Yep.
And her father was
amazing
clarinet player, one
yes.
of the greats. And she said, don't listen with your eyes. Important, right?
Very important.
And you've got a bunch of beautiful people in Bella. You have to make sure that they're playing well.
Exactly.
Or the Lisa Visculias of the world, or the me of the world, I guess.
Definitely.
But how do you make sure that they're all the 30 people in the group are keeping that standard up?
We just did auditions last week for some players. We put them through a process of they need to perform a classical piece for us. They need to perform one of our pieces, improvisation. Acoustic violin, electric violin, and of course also it's entertainment, so just like modeling, the look is a factor. We have clients that we need to provide a certain product for that needs to fit the image that they're looking for. So all of these things are a factor. We have a lot of girls on our roster that make my job super easy. They just show up, they 110% every time. I don't have to teach them a thing. Then there's other people who are new, but they're really willing to learn and they have great attitudes. So I give them some private lessons and some of the other girls help out who are more seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we like to give everyone a chance. We don't like to say, oh, well, if you're not ready right now, you'll never play with us. So we kind of have this, like, it's almost like a farm system, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I was just thinking,
like the Yankees,
it's like, a Major League Baseball
That's right.
Franchise.
We've turned mm-hmm. out quite a few Derek Jeters, yes, unfortunately.
I'm kidding. Last question for you as we wrap it up. Is there anybody you haven't played with that you really want to, have you either recorded with or been on stage with, you were with Quincy Jones at one time.
That's
you
right, we
for
did.
For him. That was an incredible moment for you.
That was a crazy moment meeting mm-hmm. Quincy Jones. He's amazing. My dad was not all too happy about the photo of us sitting on his lap.
Us being you.
Yes. Yes. Us being me.
I remember that photo.
I have to say...
I've never seen Quincy Jones smile so widely as he did in that photo.
Yes. Yeah. He was happy. I have to say, I always told everyone, if I ever get to play with Paul McCartney, I'll retire the next day. Because that's to me, I'm a huge Beatles fan. Anyone who knows me knows I'm a freak about the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always scared to hear the stories like your heroes are jerks. You know, you never want to hear that. And then you're like, man, I really liked his music. Everyone says Paul is just a stand-up guy. So he's mm-hmm. he's the one person that if I got to play with, I'd probably be like, all right, I can go home now. I'm going back to Buffalo. I'm going to eat chicken wings and get fat. So.
Well, we can hope all that happens, I guess. He wrote Eleanor Rigby. Okay, Nina D. Gregorio, Bella Electric Strings. Thanks for coming down on short notice.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure
me.
To talk to you in
everyone
any
else
context.
Canceled. I get it.
Yeah, everybody else canceled. I can't even get my host to show up. The next big thing is the symphonic rock show at Reynolds Hall at the Smith Center on September 6th, correct? September 25th with Lon Bronson at Cabaret Jazz, and you had another thing coming up.
September 21st at the Smith Center as well. Doctors in Concert, Serenades of Life, Nathan Adelson Hospice, Bella Strings will be headlining that benefit. And San Gennaro, you can catch us there as well.
All kinds of good stuff happening, and we'll have you back.
Thanks,
also,
John.
Thanks.